You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage. This week, we had the U.S. Federal Reserve meeting. They decided to leave U.S. interest rates unchanged at essentially zero and maintain the level of removing asset purchases by $10 billion a month. Okay, so to help us decipher what went on and what will likely go on in the future at the central bank, we are so pleased to have on a former governor of the Federal Reserve, Randall Krosner, who is a professor at my alma mater, the University of Chicago. Welcome, Randy.
Great to be with you.
All right. Well, this week we had no change in policy, no press conference, no updated economic outlooks, and thankfully, no dots from the board members. Yet the statement did contain decidedly optimistic language, which stands out due to the surprisingly weak U.S. GDP number that came out on Wednesday at 0.1%. Now, Randy, both you and I work in the city of Chicago, the home of the Blues. Can the Fed really be justified by such a positive view?
Well, certainly the first quarter GDP number was very disappointing, barely any growth, and a lot of that growth came from the cold. There were very high expenditures on consumer services, and utility bills are considered consumer services. So when people were staying home and not buying, they were buying very few goods during the first quarter, but they were spending a lot of money to try to stay warm. So the numbers probably are even a bit worse than they look. But the winter of our discontent hopefully is behind us, and we are starting to see some more optimistic signs. Auto sales look pretty good in March, and we've seen some better retail numbers. The Chicago Purchasing Managers Survey suggested some optimism, was actually above pretty much where any of the forecasters had it. So although we had a really, really tough winter, the signs are that we will be bouncing back for the spring.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you talk about that. And one of the critiques of the Federal Reserve is that they're consistently overestimating GDP growth. And this is one of the problems, I think, that the market has when they look at that statement today, and it seemed a little bit more optimistic than what Q1 GDP is telling us. I mean, why do you think that is? I mean, obviously they're forward looking. They look at the things that you just mentioned, but they're consistently overestimating GDP growth in their future predictions.
I think it's been very difficult in this this painfully slow recovery to kind of get the predictions right, because traditional models and basically the last 20 or 30 or 40 years worth of data would have suggested we would have had a somewhat faster recovery. And the Fed is using a lot of the data. You know, of course, some of that may not be relevant, but you don't want to ignore the past data. And so their models will lead them to say, well, we should have a little bit more of a recovery. But of course, we haven't had the kind of financial challenges that we have had now, really, since the Great Depression. So we don't really have that in our data. And I think that's what's been holding the economy back a bit. It's a bit different than what we've seen recently. And it's been harder for the Fed to fully adjust for that.
Yeah, I think in part of their models, too, they have a component of the wealth effect, or rising stock market and housing prices. It seems like whatever that number is in front of that variable, it's not really generating the GDP that they are probably anticipating. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is uncertainty, because people got quite a bit of a shock back in 2007, 8, 9, and then certainly there's been a complete recalibration of how people think about housing. There was this overly optimistic view that you can't get this broad downturn in housing, and boy, have we learned that that's not true.
Sadly,
and
yes.
And so that even though in many areas housing prices are back up, although most areas are still off their peaks, the stock market is back up near or at its peak. It doesn't have the same impact because people feel less confidence about that. And part of that also is a lot of policy uncertainty, particularly on the fiscal side.
Right. Yeah, I mean, without question. And one of the things that has driven the stock market, I believe, recently, obviously, is the change from that came from Washington, D.C., not only on extending the debt ceiling to March of 2015, which takes away the threat of default, but also having two budgets, which, you know, takes you into 2016, and that means the government's not going to get shut down. I want to ask you about this, though. One of the discussions that I think happened this week at the Fed must have been in the area of potential growth versus actual growth for the U.S. economy. Now, back in the 1950s, potential growth was around, I think, about 5%. Today, the CBO projects it at about 1.75 or 2%. You know, even still, since 2008, we've been well below potential growth, and this has cost the U.S. economy. They estimate, the CBO estimates, somewhere between $700 to $800 billion. Randy, help our audience understand why this is an issue, why potential growth is an important concept for the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since the significant contraction in 2008, early 2009, we've been growing over the last few years at roughly about 2% per year. There's a big concern about what the underlying growth rate is for the U.S. People used to be more optimistic that it was more positive, and that really came from two reasons. One was the number of labor hours in the economy. We had population that was growing more rapidly. We had a younger population, so there were more people moving into the labor force, and so there were more labor hours. And the second important component is what's the output per hour, that's also known as productivity.
Right.
You've got people working, but how much are they actually producing? And there's a lot of uncertainty about that. People have very different views going forward, whether the underlying machinery of the U.S. economy is broken and will never come back, or whether it's just taking a little time to repair and we are coming back. I'm somewhere in between. I'm a little bit more optimistic than the naysayers, because I think we have had reasonable but not strong productivity growth. But one of the challenges is we have an aging population, and we've had very, very low labor force participation, not just from older people. Actually, labor force participation by older people has been a bit higher than had been expected. We have much lower labor force participation by younger people and mm-hmm. by prime-aged males. And that's really a concern, because if people aren't working, they're not generating income, and also when you think about the fiscal issues, they're also not generating revenues to be able to pay for some of those big future burdens.
Yeah, and that is a great point. You know, you need those people in working, you need them contributing, and it's a two-sided effect, in the sense that if they're not working and if they're drawing on social services, that increases the cost to the government, obviously increases what the government has to spend. But then, of course, if they're not working, then you don't get that revenue in. So it's doubly bad. But let me spin this a little optimistically. Obviously, you know, I've had guys on from Jim Glassman from J.P. Morgan, Jens Nordvig
sure.
from Nomura Security, and they're all looking for about 3% GDP growth in the second quarter, some even as high as 4%. Now, with interest rates extremely low, this is kind of an interesting point. Would the Fed react to tighter policy if we see a pickup in growth with an acceleration in wage inflation? I mean, I know this is a little mm-hmm. bit down the road, but we have seen a little bit pickup in the wage earnings. And if we get like a 4% number, like some people are talking about in the second quarter, you know, how does the Fed view that? Is that just a makeup for the first quarter, or did they think there are enough stronger underlying trends there to warrant concern?
Yeah, I only hope we have this concern that we do see that we're growing at 4%.
This
we have
is what
really
we
strong
want,
job
right?
growth. Yeah, I want to see that policy dilemma come up. But obviously, it will be a dilemma for the Fed if the
right.
If the economy does start to come back more strongly, and it that then manifests itself in stronger wage growth. I mean, ultimately, we do need stronger wage growth, and that's going to be healthy. But the Fed has to take into account how changes in labor market conditions and wage growth will affect overall inflation.
Right.
Certainly in the very short run, the Fed wants to see inflation move up from its roughly 1.4% that came out in the GDP numbers that were reported today. And they, you know, that's below their goal of around 2%. And
mm-hmm.
so there's a fair amount of wiggle room right now to just get back to the long-run goal. And the Fed has also stated that they'll tolerate some inflation over that 2% goal, not too much, but a little, to make sure that the economy is sort of getting back on its feet. And they know that there's a lot of catch-up that has to take place for wages. So I think even if we have a strong quarter, it's going to be a while before that manifests itself in terms of inflation, and also before the Fed would react to that.
Right, and you know, I want to talk about the unemployment rate, but I want to let the audience know we're doing this before we get the non-farm payroll numbers out on Friday and the unemployment rate as well. But you know, the other major issue clearly for the Federal Reserve is the U6 level of employment or underemployment, and that stands at about 12.7%. You know, normally the spread between that and the regular unemployment rate is about 4%, meaning the regular unemployment rate should be at 8.7%, not 6.7%. So, Randy, I mean, I think, and you tell me, having been on the inside, is the Fed finally coming to the realization that monetary policy really has limits to reducing this rate and truly runs the risk of wage inflation if they persist with these extraordinary measures?
Well, I think that's exactly one of the discussions around the table, and I think people have different points of view on that. Janet Yellen mentioned this very technical number, the U6 number, which includes a broader view of the unemployment situation, because the unemployment rate only counts people in the labor force if they are either employed or they're actively looking for work. This broader measure also takes into account so-called discouraged workers.
Right.
Takes into account people who are working part-time who want to be full-time, and a whole variety of other things, which, you know, suggests, as you said, that the labor market is much softer than that typical headline number, the regular employment unemployment number would suggest. I think the Fed is certainly concerned about long-term unemployment and discouraged workers, but I think the majority of people around the table think that the Fed still does have an ability to try to make headway on unemployment, because they're saying that, well, gosh, you know, even though in the typical number that people look at is now coming down, you know, into the sixes, mid sixes, if we look at these broader measures, they're still very, very elevated, and so there's a lot more that policy can do to have an impact, to try to encourage investment, to try to encourage economic growth, and encourage increases in employment.
Right. So, just in the minute that we have here, Randy, as you look at the Fed and analyze what they've been doing, again from the inside, you've been there, you've seen a lot of things. What stands out to you of what can happen just in the next couple of months that would really change their attitude towards their continued tapering and the level of extraordinary measures that they've been taking? What would really upset that?
So I think it would take a pretty big shock to the economic outlook. Now, unfortunately, mm-hmm. we have a lot of challenges around the world.
Yeah, Russia, you know, Ukraine,
Russia.
Shutting down the energy flow. Yeah.
And there's still a lot of tensions in Asia,
right.
The tensions between the Japanese and the Chinese. And so, you know, those could flare up at any time. Obviously, there are still issues in the Middle East. And so you could have a geopolitical event that could make people very pessimistic about what the future holds. And that might put the Fed on hold. There could be a significant change in the inflation rate, but I think it's highly unlikely that in the next 3 or 4 months it could change so much that it would get the Fed to change its policies. Also, on the other side, it could be that you know, we're starting to see deflation challenges in Europe, and some people have argued
right.
we may be facing further deflation challenges in the U.S. If we saw deflation in Europe, if we saw the instead of having significantly higher wage growth, what if we slowed down in the U.S. and had significantly lower wage growth and get dangerously close to deflation? That could lead the Fed to to stop the taper. But I think those extreme situations, deflation or significant negative shock, are unlikely. But certainly given my time in Washington from 2006 to 2009, I never say never about any of these kinds of things.
Yeah, especially over that time frame. Well, there's lots of questions for the Fed, and we're so fortunate to have on Randy Krosner to make sense of it all. Randy, thanks for coming on today.
Delighted.
All right, let's take a break, and when we get back, I'll give you my final thoughts. You're listening to Engage.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business. Game-changing technologies and strategies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up your status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take your coffee break with Game Changers on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time, for our special series on today's top HR trends. Learn how you can become the savvy HR innovator who takes your company across the finish line as you look ahead to the next breakthrough human resources strategy. HR Trends with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
As your business grows, are you growing with it? Do you have the right balance of time, attention, work, and personal life? Take the growing pains out of growth and tune into The Business Edge with Marcia Zeidel. If you are spending most of your energy managing problems rather than focusing on taking your business to the next level, our program will give you the steps you need to make sure you have everything in place for forward-thinking business leadership. The Business Edge is heard every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.